Welcome back to our podcast. This is One Nation, One Justice. I'm Jim Carmichael. Thank you for joining me, and let's get into today's broadcast. The title for today's broadcast is What Happens Inside Affects What Happens Outside. Before we can change laws, we must first change minds. Imagine for a moment that a prison gate opens tomorrow morning. A man or a woman walks through that gate, carrying a small bag containing whatever possessions they have accumulated during years of incarceration. Their debt, according to the law, has been paid. And now they are coming home. Where are they going? Perhaps to your city? Perhaps to your neighborhood? Perhaps they will apply for a job where you work? Perhaps they will attend a church near your home? Perhaps someday they will stand beside you in the grocery store. That person has been separated from society for years. But now the separation is over. And here's a question we should have been asking during every one of those years. Who do we want walking through that gate? Because what happened to that person while incarcerated matters to every one of us. We often think about prisons as isolated institutions. They are surrounded by fences and walls. They are intentionally separated from our communities. And because most of us never enter them, it is easy to think what happens inside those walls has very little to do with our daily lives. But that is an illusion. The overwhelming majority of incarcerated people will eventually return to society. And what happened to them during incarceration does not disappear when they leave. It comes home with them. If incarceration helped produce stability, discipline, responsibility, education, and self-control, those qualities come home. If it helps someone overcome an addiction, that progress comes home. If someone learned a trade and developed a work ethic, those skills come home. But the opposite is also true. If years of incarceration produced greater anger, resentment, deterioration, idleness, or hopelessness, those things can come home too. If addiction remained untreated, it comes home. If mental health problems remained unaddressed, they come home. If someone spent 10 or 20 years without developing any marketable skills, that lack of preparation follows them through the gate, and then we expect that individual to succeed. This is why the correctional environment cannot be viewed as neutral. Prisons shape behavior. The question is whether they shape behavior in a direction that ultimately makes society safer. And that brings us to a word that is sometimes misunderstood: rehabilitation. Some people hear that word and immediately think we are talking about being soft on crime. We are not. A person who commits a crime should be held accountable. A dangerous person may need to be separated from society. And there are individuals whose crimes or continuing dangerousness may require extremely long sentences or perhaps permanent confinement. Public safety must remain the first responsibility of any justice system. But what about the person who is coming home? What about the individual who will complete the sentence and walk through that gate? What do we want to happen during those years of incarceration? Simply keeping someone locked away for 10 years does not automatically make that person better prepared for freedom. Time served is not the same thing as transformation. Transformation requires structure. It requires expectations. It requires accountability. And it requires opportunities for measurable progress. Education, vocational training, substance abuse recovery, mental health treatment when needed, emotional regulation training, personal responsibility, family reconciliation where appropriate, and structured preparation for employment, housing, and reentry. Those are not rewards for committing crimes. They are investments in public safety, because eventually the gate opens. And when it does, we have a choice about the kind of person we have prepared to walk through those gates. Consider the alternative. A person enters prison with little education, few job skills, an addiction problem, poor emotional control, and destructive patterns of behavior. 10 years later, we release that person, and they still have little education. They still have no marketable skills. The addiction was never meaningfully addressed. Their emotional problems remain. Their family relationships may now be worse. And after 10 years away from society, they have little understanding of how to rebuild a stable life. I even had one man who had been in prison for 28 years tell me he didn't want out. He realized he had no way of knowing how. He had absolutely no idea of how to function in today's society. But then we hand them their belongings, open the gate, and tell them, "Don't come back." And we are surprised when some of them do. That is not an argument against personal responsibility. Every individual remains responsible for the choices they make. But a justice system should also be evaluated by whether its structure helps reduce future crime. That is why recidivism matters. We often talk about recidivism as a statistic, but behind every new offense, there may be another victim, another police investigation, another prosecution, another courtroom, another sentence, another incarceration, another family disrupted, and another enormous cost to taxpayers. So reducing recidivism is not primarily about helping prisoners. It is about preventing the next crime. That distinction is important. The goal of reform is not to excuse wrongdoing. The goal is to reduce repetition. If someone has committed a crime, we cannot undo what happened. We cannot erase the original victim's suffering. But perhaps we can prevent another victim from experiencing the same thing. And if education, treatment, discipline, accountability, vocational training, and structured reentry can help accomplish that, why should we refuse to use them? A successful correctional system should therefore measure more than time. It should measure progress. Is this person more responsible, more emotionally stable, better educated, free from substance dependency, capable of earning a legitimate living, better prepared to make responsible decisions, ready to live within the law? In other words, is the person leaving prison better prepared for society than the person who entered it? That should be one of the fundamental measurements of correctional success. Because prisons do not exist apart from our communities. They are a part of our communities. What happens inside eventually affects what happens outside. And prison reform, therefore, is not simply about prisoners. It's about victims who should never become victims. It's about families that should never be torn apart by another crime. It's about police officers who should not have to arrest the same individual again and again and again. It is about taxpayers who should not have to finance an endless cycle of arrest, prosecution, incarceration, release, and rearrest. And most importantly, it is about safer communities. Accountability matters. Consequences matter. Public safety matters. But if the person we incarcerate today will become our neighbor tomorrow, then what happens between those two points matters as well. We can use those years simply to contain someone, or we can use those years to demand accountability, develop responsibility, address destructive behavior, teach useful skills, and prepare that person to live successfully when freedom eventually comes. Because one day, the gate will open. And when it does, what happened behind those walls will walk through that gate with them. What happens in prison does not stay in prison. It comes home. This is One Nation, One Justice. And remember, before we can change laws, we must first change minds. So thank you for taking the time to listen to this. Please give it serious consideration, because it does affect all of us. Thank you.